FilmSpotting SVU is presented by Movies on Demand on cable, bringing the latest indie movies into your home at the touch of a button.
Watch Killer Joe, a dark comedy now playing, starring Matthew McConaughey and Emil Hirsch. Also playing is John Dies at the End, starring Paul Giamatti, and available on demand before it hits theaters.
The latest independent films are ready when you are with Movies on Demand on cable. The art house is now in your house.
From New York City, this is Film Spotting Streaming Video Unit. I'm Matt Singer.
And I'm Allison Wilmore. And on this episode of Film Spotting SVU, a very special episode.
Absolutely.
We're breaking from our usual format and our usual world of streaming films to take a look back at the year in movies. We've got a list of categories, some typical, but most not so much, that we're going to use to highlight the best of 2012 on the big screen, an honor that we are calling the Svoovies.
Yes, we're wearing our tuxedos. I've never seen you in a tuxedo before, Allison, but you look fantastic.
Thank you.
You don't need to get dressed up because it's a podcast and people can't see you, but I appreciate that.
It was a nice thing to do.
You went the extra mile. I appreciated that. I'm wearing my tuxedo t-shirt, and we are ready to give out the Svoovies. And this is a little like something we used to do on our old podcast. We used to give out these awards at the end of the year. And whenever possible, we're going to bring in the streaming world, the VOD world, because that's what we like to do here. We'll be telling you where you can see these movies, whether that's in theaters, whether that's at home on streaming or VOD sites. But first up is Opening Break, as always, a segment we do in conjunction with our sponsor, Movies on Demand on Cable, in which we spotlight one title that's new on VOD and give you a rundown of some other notable films new on demand. Allison, this week we're just going to kind of run down a whole bunch of new titles. We've got a bunch we want to get through, so let's just plow right through them.
Okay. On demand on January 1st is All Superheroes Must Die, which is an independent superhero action film starring Jason Trost, James Remar, and Lucas Till. And it premiered at the Toronto After Dark Film Festival and is about four superheroes who wake up in an abandoned town, stripped of their powers at the mercy of their arch nemesis.
Interesting.
Have to do these challenges to save this town full of innocents. I've heard it described as Kick-Ass meets Saw. So that is All Superheroes Must Die. It's available on January 1st. Also available on January 1st, Little Birds. This is a film that premiered at the Sundance Film Festival in 2011. Stars Juno Temple, whose career is really taking off. She's everywhere these days. And Kay Panabaker as two girls who are growing up in the Salton Sea, and they leave to follow two skateboarders to Los Angeles. And it's apparently loosely based on the life of writer-director Elgin James. So that is Little Birds. And one last film that will be new on VOD on January 1st, The Other Dream Team, which is a documentary film directed by Marius Markovicius, and it's the inspirational story of the 1992 Lithuanian national basketball team at the Summer Olympics in Barcelona. And it's got a lot of interviews with different basketball players.
I've heard some great things about this doc, actually. I'm really looking forward to seeing this one.
Uh-huh. And one more film we have for you. It is new on VOD on January 3rd. And that is The Sorcerer and the White Snake, which is a Chinese fantasy film starring Jet Li.
Ooh.
It's about a sorcerer.
And his White Snake?
Fights.
And the band White Snake?
Unfortunately, no. It's about a sorcerer who's fighting for the soul of a young doctor who has fallen in love with a woman who is actually a 1,000-year-old snake demon.
Do they play White Snake songs in the movie?
I don't know, but I think it's a cautionary tale about dating that we can all understand. So that is The Sorcerer and the White Snake, and that is new on VOD on January 3rd.
So, Allison, the Svoovies. Now, on our old podcast years ago, we used to enjoy doing this, you know, because at this time of year, everyone's looking back at the year in film, and they're giving out their best actor, their best actress. They're saying it like this for some reason. They suddenly become very hoity-toity. It just seemed like, well, we could do that too, but let's do something different. So we started giving out these awards that are, if they're not strange, they're a little more at least eclectic. And we just kind of have a lot of fun with it. And it seemed to catch on. People seem to enjoy it. And we enjoy doing it. And it is kind of more fun than just giving out your best actress and best actor awards, because we do that anyway everywhere else. So let's have a little fun with it. So we're going to get to the Svoovies, as we're calling them now, in a minute. But first, let's go through those top 10 lists, because that's what people want to know. They want to know your favorite films of the year, Allison. So what we're going to do first, we're each going to give our top 10 films of the year. Maybe we'll talk about the year in film in general really quickly, and then we will get into the Svoovies. So, Allison, why don't you begin with your top 10 list? What was your top 10 films of 2012?
Well, number 10 is actually a film that we have up for a listener's choice pick. It is Dark Horse, Todd Solondz's film. Number 9 is The Cabin in the Woods, mm-hmm. which I think we'll be mentioning a bit later. Number 8 is Beasts of the Southern Wild, which I think we will also be touching on later, perhaps.
Maybe not.
Number 7, Zero Dark Thirty, Kathryn Bigelow's great procedural. Number 6, a film I know you like a lot, Holy Motors. Mm-hmm. Number 5, Rust and Bone. Number 4, Lincoln, a film that I have to say really surprised me. Number 3, The Master. Terrific piece of filmmaking. Number 2, The Loneliest Planet. And my number 1 film is This Is Not a Film by Jafar Panahi.
Okay, interesting. Very interesting. I guess the only one I haven't seen at all that I missed was Rust and Bone.
I really enjoyed it. And I didn't necessarily expect to enjoy it that much, mm-hmm. considering what I'd heard about it. I think it's a really well-made film.
Do you want to just very briefly tell listeners who maybe don't know what it's about, what it's about?
Okay, it sounds terrible if I tell you what it's about. Okay, I will tell you what it's about.
Try to make it sound as unterrible as you can.
I can't do this in 30 seconds. All right, it's about how a former killer whale trainer gets her legs... amputated in a tragic killer whale accident at the marine park, and then she falls in love with an underground bare knuckle boxer. But it's really good. It's so good.
You sold me.
Thank you.
You sold me. You absolutely sold me.
All right. Well, Matt,
I have heard some great things about it. You're right. Describing it that way, maybe not the best sales pitch, but it sounds really interesting. That's the only one I have your list that I haven't seen. There was one of your films that I don't know that I liked as much. Uh-huh. Everything else on there, I'd say, is very solid picks. Here's my top 10 list.
Okay.
Number 10, a little independent film entitled Girl Walk All Day, which I really love. Maybe we should talk about that separately after I run through my whole list. Number 9, Looper, Rian Johnson's fabulous sci-fi film. Number 8, Argo, Ben Affleck's superb hostage thriller. Number 7, Compliance, very divisive movie about a real-life incident at a fast food restaurant. Number 6, Clown, a film I think we mentioned a few times maybe on the podcast, a really hilarious comedy from Denmark. Number 5, This Is Not a Film, a fabulous film, your favorite film of the year, my number 5 film. Number 4, The Cabin in the Woods, we agree on that one as well. I liked it even more than you did. Number 3, Zero Dark Thirty, also on my list. Number 2, The Master, also on your list as well. And we also agree on my number 1 film, Holy Motors, my favorite year. What was your...
It was number six.
Number six. So we each kind of swapped in the same areas. My number 1 was your number 6. Your number 1 was my number 5. So we've got a lot of overlap there, especially in the top of our lists, it looks like. Yeah, let me just briefly talk about this Girl Walk All Day film, which I hadn't even heard about until a few weeks ago when one of our colleagues, David Ehrlich from Movies.com and the Operation Kino podcast, which is a really a fine podcast, he watched it. He was raving about it on Twitter, which is, you know, that's how it works these days. People rave about a movie on Twitter and you say, I've never heard of it. I should watch it. And in the case of Girl Walk All Day, that movie you can watch for free online. You don't have to belong to Netflix or anything. It's available on the film's website, girlwalkallday.com. You can watch the entire film in chapters. It is a dance film. It is about this character named The Girl, this fabulous performance from this dancer named Anne Marzen, who she sort of like bursts out of a ballet class and just dances out into New York City and dances through the whole city. Starting, she's in Staten Island. She takes the ferry. She's dancing on the ferry. She dances through the terminal, dances out into Lower Manhattan, all the way to Yankee Stadium, essentially. And you're watching her dance and interact with people in the city. And clearly, this was not a film with permits. She's randomly bumping into people who give her dirty looks. Some people join in. And there's this wonderful sort of depiction of New York City, just the kind of joy of dance and movement. Oh, the entire movie is the soundtrack is the Girl Talk album All Day. So the entire album is the entire movie, and each sort of track is a song, and that's how they divide up the chapters in the movie. And it is fabulous. It is just – it sounds kind of like a stunt, like a viral video, like, you know, wacky woman dances on the subway. But there's something more about it. I mean, maybe it's the commitment, that the fact that it's 70 minutes and that the dancers are fantastic. These are professional dancers. And there's a few other minor character dancers that join in. What I kind of also love about it is the fact that this was a movie that was funded through Kickstarter, the website where you can crowdsource and people can donate to your film. And the movie kind of works as a lovely metaphor for making a film on Kickstarter, because it starts off with just this one girl. And she's kind of dancing in public, and people are giving her dirty looks. And by the end of the film, she's got, like, kind of people have started to join in. It's almost like it's spread kind of like a viral video, or kind of the way that you put your stuff out there in public now, and you say, this is what I want to make, and I need this money. I need this support. Will you give it to me? And sometimes when you have a good idea, people join in, and it's sort of a beautiful kind of metaphor for how the movie or any movie like this is made. So the film is called Girl Walk All Day. And again, you can watch it right now for free at home. It's really fabulous. Allison, have you seen it yet?
I've only seen some of it. It's a lot of fun what I've seen, and I'm looking forward to seeing the whole thing.
Okay, fair enough. Have you watched it yet?
No.
Okay, go watch it right now.
No, I'm not going to do that yet.
All right, fine.
We have to do a podcast.
Okay, fine. Let's keep talking then. The year in film, 2012. You know, my favorite movie was Holy Motors, which I really feel is just a perfect – not only is it just a great, wonderful film, it's a really perfect film for this year when we've had a lot of pontificating about the end of film, the end of film culture. Do you feel like it's the end of film culture, Allison? I mean, I guess from a certain perspective, the fact that there are so few films – distributed on actual film, on actual celluloid, that is something that is ending. Are you concerned about the future of cinema? Did this year and the movies you watched give you hope, or did they make you – are you concerned?
Well, I think the idea that it's the end of film, if you're going to say that, you have to come up against the truth that, like, I think the New York Times, which they review every movie that opens in New York, every movie that gets a week-long run in New York –
a week-long theatrical run,
gets a review, which is part of the reason that people, like, pay to have their movie open in New York sometimes is to get that review.
Right.
I think they released the fact that they reviewed like 800 films this year.
Wow.
Or something like that. So if film is dead, I don't know what's going on there. You know, like nobody has told
the people making the films
right.
Film is dead.
And I think also this was just a very good year in film. You know, looking over my list of just like potential films to put on my top 10, I had a huge list, I think. And the fact that, you know, your favorite film of the year is about film.
Mm-hmm.
So is mine. I think, you know, This Is Not a Film is about being silenced, about like both the power of film and like, you know, its ability, the way it can't really be substituted for, and about what it actually means to have that be silenced.
Right.
And I think it, you know, is incredibly powerful in that. And I think it might be like a little easy to dismiss on an abstract level, like you can't make films anymore. But that comes to mean a lot in the context of this.
Yeah, that's true. I think both of our films, although yours is certainly – and it's a beautiful film. Yours is more a little more personal about it. You really could say that both films are about, you know, sort of the act of almost like being silenced or refusing to go quietly into the night, whether it is your personal expression or it is the idea of making movies in general. That's sort of what they're both about. There is sort of that feeling of maybe defiance in the face of the end of the world in a few of our other movies, like The Cabin in the Woods, actually, now that I think about it.
Which is also about film.
It is also a very large metaphor for the act of filmmaking. That's right. Although we don't want to say too much spoilery because I know it's a very secretive movie. And,
yeah, but it's about horror film, even.
It is about
what we enjoy about
right.
horror film.
And this is not a spoiler to say, I think at this point especially, that there are two characters played by Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins who are sort of these functionaries, these sort of middle management guys in this mysterious corporation who are involved in the event that we are witnessing at this cabin in the woods. How, I won't say, but they are somehow involved. And I don't think it's a coincidence that there were two primary filmmakers in this case, director, co-writer Drew Goddard and co-writer Joss Whedon. And I think they are essentially standing in for them and for the idea of the people who make horror films and what they are doing when they make them and who are they serving, who essentially are their dark masters. And in the larger metaphor, that's us. It's the audience. It's about our bloodlust.
Our terrible demands.
Our terrible, evil demand to witness brutality. And that was what I loved about that movie, was how it functioned so beautifully, both as a horror movie and as a very funny, very smart deconstruction of a horror movie. But yeah, there's another film with kind of a end-of-the-world flavor to it. On the other hand, a movie like Girl Walk is so exuberant and joyous and sort of says, if the movies are dying, if this is the end, if this is the future of cinema, the future still looks pretty exciting. Because this is what's going to happen, if everyone's going to make their movies on Kickstarter, an idea that I was admittedly kind of dubious about in the past, I'm like, if that's what they're going to be, fantastic. This movie is magnificent.
Yeah, and also, I mean, that's a really old-fashioned type of film, a dance film.
It's a dance film, dance, absolutely.
You know? And yet it
Jerome
seems incredibly,
Robbins, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, incredibly modern in that sense, you know, that this is a movie made without permits, shot in the street. With two Girl Talk album, you know, who is an artist who's already like a remix artist who is like
that's a great point.
Breaking boundaries.
That's a great point.
Another trend that I thought was interesting, before we get to like, I think what is one of the major trends of the year, I thought this was an interesting year for found footage films. You know, like we've talked about King Kelly before, and I think Chronicle, which is a film I finally got around to seeing that I liked a lot. Like, it really surprised me how much I liked it.
Yeah,
like, both
very good movie.
Do some very interesting things with both of those films, with just like self-documentation in a way that I think opens up the found footage format much more than the traditional I'm going to make a documentary about this, you know, that it makes a lot of sense for these characters to film themselves. And it also, they're also very aware of it, that they are documenting themselves. They are not, I wanted to make a movie and then, oh, look what happened. That the way that the films use that device is very contemporary. And I think in a way that you couldn't even have even done a few years ago.
No, absolutely. That's a great point. Those are the I think actually it's funny, in my list of sort of like all the best movies of, or my favorite movies of the year, which goes well past my favorite 10 into like my favorite like 50, they're right next to each other on that list, down in like the mid 20s or in the 30s. I don't have it all numbered, but those were the two best found footage movies of the year, I think. And I think you hit exactly why. The one theme I would point out, and we don't want to go on too long because we want to get to the Sfuvies. They sound better when they're Swedish, I think. One thing I've sort of noticed in recent weeks was how many movies this year were about the fear of travel. There's a lot of movies this year about being paranoid about traveling. From a movie like Argo, where so much of the drama is about like going through security checkpoints, which is a fear that's very relatable for anyone who has to go through the hassle of traveling these days, to a movie like The Impossible, which hasn't come out yet, but is about this couple that goes on a vacation to Thailand, and what happens? The worst tsunami in human history, and they're separated, and it's this awful thing, and it's all because they went on, don't go on vacation because a tsunami may strike. And there's so many more examples. I've been trying to figure out why this might be, why there are so many movies like that. I'm not entirely sure. Maybe movies are worried that you're taking vacations instead of paying for the movies, and they want to make you nervous and make you stay at home and stay watching your movies at home. Perhaps that's why. I don't really know. But that's a theme I've noticed pop up in quite a few films this year.
It's an interesting one. The theme that I was going to say was, I thought, like a very dominant one towards this end of the year, is just the idea of the procedural of everything from like Zero Dark Thirty and Argo to Lincoln, to films that are very much about process, you know, that don't cut away to the drama. They are about the work. Lincoln, you know, was a film that I liked a lot because of that, because it was about the kind of nuts and bolts of like getting votes on, you know, and how that involves sometimes giving someone a cushy job because they've already been voted out, or, you know, convincing someone to compromise on their very stern ideals. I thought that was a really terrific depiction of politics, of American politics specifically. And Zero Dark Thirty, you know, was just being highly debated now, but is a film that depicts the extremely messy and sometimes very unpleasant process of the tracking down of Osama bin Laden. And Argo as well is a film that is about the very details of like, what did it entail to get these people out of this situation? So the way that all of these films have been like, we are going to take you through this whole process, has been something that I've actually really enjoyed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen to all these great movies we've mentioned. There's so many more we haven't mentioned. You know, like I said, I have a list of my favorite movies of the year. It just goes on and on and on to movies, you know, like that we've mentioned on the show, that we haven't mentioned on the show, little films that didn't get big releases. You know, the fact that we do a show about streaming and VOD, and there's so many movies that you can see now that would have been so much harder to see in years past, because, you know, you'd hope they play your little art house theater in your town for a week and then they'd be gone until maybe they came out on DVD. I mean, that's all changed. And there's so many movies that we've seen that would have been hard to see otherwise. So it, you know, on the one hand, while you, there are things that you worry about, you know, and digital photography and 48 frames a second and all these sorts of things, when you see just the number of movies that are so good, it's hard to be a cynic. It's exciting. It's an exciting time to be doing something like this. And by doing something like this, I mean giving out the Sfuvies. Are you ready, Allison?
I am ready.
It's time. Let's begin. All right, the first category on the Svoovies, I feel like we should have like music playing us on and or something like that, is the We Didn't Get It Award. This is the award that goes to a film that was wildly praised by our colleagues, but for whatever reason, we didn't get it. Allison, what is your winner?
All right.
Of the first Svoovie?
The first Svoovie for me.
The more you say it, the more fun it gets,
it
I think.
Definitely. Goes to Silver Linings Playbook, a favorite of many critics.
Yes.
So I don't know how it was like an awards front runner for a while. It may have like fallen a little bit back in the pack. Still very acclaimed. I don't want to say that I do not understand the appeal of this film at all, but I did walk out of it not understanding how it was being held up as one of the best films of the year. Directed by David O. Russell, starring Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, Robert De Niro. It's kind of a wacky romance between two damaged characters and a kind of goofy family drama on the side. I think there are a lot of elements that are charming, but over the whole, I really didn't think it was anything that was a standout for me. So that's why it is getting my We Didn't Get It Award. Matt, what is your pick for this category?
My pick, and I had a few options, and we decided to. I just decided to go on which movie had the higher Rotten Tomatoes rating, because that seemed to be the good indicator. So I was debating between Beasts of the Southern Wild, a film which I guess I do kind of get it. I get why it's popular.
It just doesn't work.
It didn't work for me. I mean, yeah. It's on your top 10 list.
It is on my top 10 list.
So it's not that you didn't. Maybe this is the I didn't get it in that case, not that we didn't get it. But that movie had like an 85%, and this movie had a 93%, even higher. So I definitely didn't get it in this case. And that is The Sessions. This is a film premiered under a different title. I believe it was titled The Surrogate at that point. It premiered at the 2012 Sundance Film Festival. And it's about John Hawkes as this man who... He lives in an iron lung. He has this debilitating illness where he can't, you know, he's not necessarily paralyzed, but he can't really move. He's got polio. He can't move his muscles. And so he spends most of his time, 20 hours a day, inside this iron lung. And he just is beginning to worry that because of his condition, he'll never be able to have sex. He's a Catholic man, and he believes in God, and he tries to follow the rules. But he's curious, as any man would be, and he's beginning to worry if he doesn't do something, if he doesn't take an active role, you know, he's never going to find true love, and he's never going to get to experience sex.
Is this your place?
No, it's a friend's. The only bedroom furniture I have at my place is an iron lung. I've been wondering maybe about possibly buying a futon. You know, in case the need arose.
Might be worth thinking about.
I got the space, I think. It can be expensive, though, a nice futon. I mean, how much do you think a good one would cost?
Mike, take a deep breath. And let go?
This movie was, I remember when I was sitting at my computer watching Sundance from afar this year, Allison, and some of our colleagues were exploding with gushy excitement from Sundance, saying, this movie is going to win all the awards. John Hawkes for Best Actor, Helen Hunt Best Actress. It's going to be a front runner for all the Oscars, and perhaps it still will be to some degree. It certainly got a lot of great reviews. When I saw the movie, though, it did not feel to me like a great film, and I actually had a big problem with sort of the way that the nudity and the depiction of these characters was in the film, because there's a lot of sex scenes in the film, obviously, because what happens is John Hawkes hires a surrogate, this sex surrogate, which is sort of like a sex therapist. This is a profession. You can get into it if you're interested. Helen Hunt plays the sex therapist, and they have these sessions where they meet and kind of awkwardly have sex. And there's a lot of nudity on the part of Helen Hunt. She's naked all the time, which is fabulous. I have no problem with that. But, like, John Hawkes' character is constantly, like, covered. You know, they, like, go out of their way to find ways to keep him clothed in some ways, covered by blankets or whatever. And it's not like I'm dying to see John Hawkes naked, but the whole movie is supposedly about him finding self-worth and finding the beauty of his own body, which is crippled. You know, it's like this idea that even though he has this disability, you know, he's still a beautiful human being, you know, that is what he's really discovering, along with sort of the beauty of sexuality. But when you're hiding his body every chance you get and you're kind of like trying to like keep it hidden, it feels like kind of like it's up against the theme of the movie, and it feels a little disingenuous to me. I understand that because of the rules of the MPAA, they couldn't really show things. They'd get an NC-17 rating or whatever. So I can understand it practically, but thematically, I had a real problem with that when I was watching it. I didn't really get it. I didn't get the love for The Sessions, which we should say is now in theaters. If you do want to see it, it is still playing in limited release.
As is Silver Linings Playbook. Neither of them is yet available for streaming.
Right. All right. What is the next category on the Sfoovies?
All right. As an answer to the We Didn't Get It award,
yes,
we have the most unfairly maligned film. This is the film that...
They Didn't Get It award.
They Didn't Get It award. Yes. This is the film where we felt like it just got an unfair, critical assessment, let's say.
The movie was discarded.
Yes.
Perhaps not only by critics, but by audiences as well.
Sometimes that is the case.
And this is a film we wish to hold up as a beacon of light and truth in the world.
Ooh, that's asking a lot for my pick.
Yeah, maybe mine too. Yeah. Let's backtrack that. We're holding it up as a beacon of a not terrible movie in the world.
Exactly. One that I feel like you might want to check out.
Exactly.
So what's your pick for this award?
Sure. My pick is a film that came out. It's hard to believe it came out this year. It feels like a long time ago. It kind of came and went very quickly. You didn't hear anyone talking about it. It was entitled Wanderlust. This was the new film from David Wayne, a filmmaker who I enjoy, who went on from The State. He was a member of The State and went on to make Wet Hot American Summer and several other films. I felt like this film kind of got the exact same reception as Wet Hot American Summer, a film that was basically forgotten, discarded, ignored, and then became, as time went on, a kind of a cult hit. And I really hope the same thing happens with this film, because I felt about this film how I felt about Wet Hot American Summer. Maybe it's not as good. It's definitely not as good
as Wet Hot
American.
It's definitely
not as good. It's not as good as American Summer. But it is. It's a fun film. I really enjoyed it. It has all these wonderful characters. A lot of the alumni from The State came back for it. It was written by Ken Marino, another State alumni, with David Wayne. And it was about this couple, played by Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston, who sort of, it's almost like Green Acres, you know, like give up their city life. They realize they're living in a tiny apartment and they're struggling and it's just not for them. They decide they've had enough of New York City and they just decide they're going to pack up and start a new life somewhere. And they wind up at this like hippie commune, just accidentally, temporarily for a night. But they like it so much they decide to stay. And again, okay, it's not as good as Wet American Summer, but there were some wonderful performances in this movie, including Aniston and Rudd, who I thought were great as the main couple, and particularly Justin Thoreau, who gave a very memorable performance as one of the sleaziest guys at the hippie commune, who's like the free love thing. He's doing it just a little too hard, where it's coming on a little too strong. And Malin Ackerman had a great little part as another very... they're all hippies. Malin Ackerman, Joe Latrullio, Catherine Hahn, Kerry Kenny, a fabulous supporting cast. I'm reading this list going, why didn't I think of this movie for like the best ensemble of the year as I was filling out those awards? Yeah, okay, yes, it's not going to change. It's not a beacon of light and truth, whatever that nonsense I said before. Forget that. But it's a really fun movie. I think if you watch it at home, you're going to laugh. Sadly, for some reason, it's not yet available on VOD, on streaming. I'm not sure what's taking so long. It came out so long ago. It is available on DVD and Blu-ray. And that's a fine way to see it. So that's Wanderlust.
Okay.
My pick for the They Didn't Get It award.
Okay. My pick is a film that it kind of came and went. I think that people expected it to get a slightly better return at the box office than it ended up getting. But it is Sparkle, which is a remake of the 1976 film about three sisters living in Harlem who form a girl group in the 1950s. The remake takes place in Detroit, and it's during the Motown era in the 1960s, starring Jordan Sparks of American Idol, the late Whitney Houston, in a role that very much overshadows the film, like, you know, now. Directed by Salim Akil. I was very pleasantly surprised by this film. I think that it features a really surprisingly great stand-up performance from Carmen Ejogo, who
yes.
plays mm-hmm. the eldest sister, who's the most talented one. And
she's almost so good. And this is a good pick for this. I actually could have given this award, that I could have picked this movie too. She's almost so good, though. It almost ruins the movie, because the movie's storyline requires Jordan Sparks' character to be like the neglected, brilliant genius, where you're like, she's her flashy sister, Carmen Ejogo, is stealing the spotlight, but you don't feel that way because Carmen Ejogo is so magnetic, such a magnificent supporting performance that you just wanted to keep watching her.
Yeah, there's the first scene, I think, where she, like, walks, they sing together.
Oh, yeah.
And they, like, she walks on in, like, slow motion, and I think it's, like, out of focus, and it focuses on her, and you just tell that, like, they know that they have, like, a star.
A star is born.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome sister and her sisters.
Where in the world did you get those church dresses?
Get this man a drink, he's gonna need one.
And so it's a terrific turn by her. I do think that the film kind of accommodates that a bit by allowing her to turn around on Jordan Sparks' character and be like, you're using me as much as I'm, you know, because she's a songwriter. Jordan Sparks is the one who's an aspiring songwriter. But I think it actually also, it brings in a lot of kind of themes of African-American womanhood, really, and these ideas of what it means to be kind of like to grow up to be like a good girl, basically. You know, Whitney Houston's character is now like this very strict church lady, but you learn that she came from a past where she like tried to make a career singing, and like there's no father in the picture for any of these girls. You know, she's trying to make up for a past that she now regrets by being extremely strict with her daughters. To the point where she might be kind of limiting some of them. And so I think the film brings in like a really nice idea of the fact that they're still working out what it means, like what kind of to aspire to in terms of like success even. And one of the characters even goes on to medical school. And that's a whole theme kind of tying into, you know, like empowerment movement. I think that there's more to this film than just being a vehicle for an American Idol contestant.
Yes. And I think a lot of people looked at it and said, oh, this is Dreamgirls again. I just saw Dreamgirls a few years ago. I don't need to see it again. And I think the fact that, you know, Whitney Houston's death certainly did cast a sort of a shadow over the film. And
yeah, and she does not look good. I mean, she
looks okay. She sounds kind of sad.
She just looks, I mean, there's one part where a character is like, you look tired. Yeah. And she does look tired. She gets one standout singing moment that is very impressive, but it's
and also sort of fits within the theme of the movie, and also with the end of her life, which is really sad too. It's hard not to think about what happened to her, which maybe people didn't want to be reminded. Yeah. I don't know.
But it is also, I mean, even in that, it is incredibly bittersweet given the character, and it doesn't detract from it. I think as a final role, it's incredibly sad as it was that she's, you know, gone so young. It does, I think, like bring out like her presence in that role brings out like a really interesting angle to the film.
Yes, I agree. I think that was a great pick. Sparkle. People should check it out. Yep, where can they see it?
They can see it on, it's available for rent right now on Amazon, iTunes, Vudu, YouTube, and Blockbuster.
Okay. Before we move on to the next awards, let me just say very briefly, because I suspect people will wonder why we didn't say it at all. For one of these two awards, it's funny how it could go either way, depending on your opinion. Cloud Atlas. Yeah. Was it the They Didn't Get It award, or was it the We Didn't Get It award, Allison? What do you think?
I had it under...
clearly one of the most divisive movies of the year.
Yes. I had it under Unfairly Maligned.
Yes, we both did.
Yes.
We wanted to say that.
Yes, okay.
Poor Cloud Atlas.
Poor Cloud Atlas.
You certainly, because it certainly would have fit either category, depending on how you felt. So, yes. So, we were on the side of Cloud Atlas. They Didn't Get It. Runner-up. It's getting jilted yet again. It's not even getting the They Didn't Get It award. Poor Cloud Atlas. All right, let's move on to the next Sfuvie Award, which is for Best Fight Scene. A lot of competition this year. My winner of the, and really for me, even though there was a lot of competition, this is like a no contest for me. The best fight scene of the year belongs to the kitchen fight from Sleepless Night, a fabulous French crime thriller about a man who is trapped in this nightclub where he's being pursued by the cops and a bunch of criminals, and he has to try to avoid all of them, trying to stay alive, trying to recover his son who's been kidnapped. And in the midst of all of this, he winds up getting into a fight in a kitchen with one of the cops. I won't explain any of the reasons why or what happens, but the two of them get into this really intense struggle. It's not a Jackie Chan kind of choreographed, balletic, beautiful exercise in physical beauty. It is two dudes who hate each other, who are just trying to tear each other apart, and just grappling and fighting, and just the intensity, the sweatiness of it is amazing. And they make excellent use of the kitchen, the people in the kitchen, the other people who are there watching this happen with these kind of shocked looks on their faces, and also all the things around them they can use. Pots, pans, fryers, even drawers. Opening drawers at one point becomes a like kind of a recurring motif, which is really exciting. Just oh, so good. I love Sleepless Night. I think I talked about it on the podcast a few months ago. Really one of my favorites of the year. Didn't make my top 10 list, but it certainly would be an honorable mention for me. Just a beloved, wonderful crime thrill. If you never saw it, it is available now on Amazon Prime for free if you're an Amazon Prime member. You can also rent it on Amazon or iTunes. I don't know what else needs to be said. It's just awesome. I love that movie and a great fight. If you've anyone seen Sleepless Night, it's like shorthand, the kitchen fight, the kitchen scene. Everyone knows what you're talking about because it's just that good. If you're an action movie fan and you haven't seen Sleepless Night yet, you have to watch it.
Okay, well, my pick is from a little better known film, I think. Rich slightly larger.
Probably a couple. I think maybe a couple larger maybe
audiences. Yeah. It is Skyfall, and I picked the fight on top of the skyscraper in Shanghai towards the beginning of the film. You know, I think one of the things that was so great about Skyfall is that it's not just a very good refresh of the Bond character again. He goes from being a young agent to being a slightly perhaps like past his prime agent from like in the, like three movies that Daniel Craig has done mm-hmm. so far,
yep.
Which I think is like a much better angle for him really than being like rebooting him was nice, but he may be a little better as the slightly aging agent.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's just also very well made. You know, it's shot by Roger Deakins. It's a beautiful movie.
One of the best looking movies
it's
of the year,
gorgeous.
For sure.
Yeah, and I think that this scene shows that off really well. You know, it's when Bond has gone to track the mercenary Patrice who stole that hard drive containing all the names of undercover agents.
Who cares?
Because,
of course, stole the MacGuffin.
I know. You know, like, obviously, we always keep lists of all of the undercover agents somewhere, just like on a thumb drive to be stolen. But
where else are you going to put it, Allison? Come on.
Yeah, there's lists that go missing so often. So yeah. He goes to track down the guy in Shanghai. He's been told he's going to be up at this place, and the guy has gone to assassinate someone. And then they have a fight in this like darkened, like empty office space that's all like glass panels.
Well, it's like unfinished, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And they're fighting between like all of these partitions. And then I think the kind of most beautifully is that you have there's like an ad being broadcast on the skyscraper. Like it's either like
a digital moving billboard. Yeah.
On the surface, or like there's a billboard there, and there's like it's like a jellyfish, I think, mm-hmm. you see moving across. So while you have this like very violent fight going on, you have this gorgeous imagery going on in the background. It is almost like a sci-fi movie, you know, that it's very reminiscent of like imagery that you've seen in Blade Runner and like all these other scenes of the future, mm-hmm. except it's not, it's present day Shanghai.
Yeah,
but it's a really like gorgeous scene, and I think that, you know, you don't see that kind of care, visual care, necessarily being put into these Bond movies, so it really gave it a sense of poetry,
or into a lot of action. Well, yeah. Action movies, I was going to say, and you're right, it is a beautiful scene. It's also, you know, it's for me, what I appreciated about that scene was, as a guy who loves Bond movies in general but hated Quantum of Solace, which was so choppy and cutty and trying to be a Bourne movie, there's a particular part of that where they're actually fighting, which is all one long take.
Yeah.
And even though it's in shadow and you can't quite see everything, the fact that it is two men sort of fighting without any cuts, I really appreciate it. And it like kind of flows right into the next sequences, which is sort of like a hanging off the edge of the building sort of thing.
Right.
So that whole part, I really appreciated. As a guy, to me, that almost felt like an apology for the way that Quantum of Solace was shot.
Yeah, and then it ends with the kind of great moment in which he looks across at the building, at the Bond girl, of what like the movie's like main Bond girl, who is it like standing in the skyscraper across the way, and she's looking at him,
mm-hmm.
and it's like another kind of nice bit of visual poetry that really I think set the film apart from a lot of the recent action movies for me.
It's a very worthy Sfoovy winner. Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. So what is our next Sfoovy award category?
This was a late addition to the Sfoovies.
Yes, this is a brand new Sfoovy.
Yes. But I was looking through the year in films,
yes,
and I thought I sensed a trend here, and enough that there was a competition, really.
Yeah. There was a lot of best fight scene competition. There was even more competition for this category, which is Allison.
Best supporting crazy eyes.
Oh, so many supporting crazy eyes.
Yes,
this year.
Lot of wild eyed villains.
Flop sweated.
Yes.
Evil, super evil, maniacal.
Veins bulging. Yes.
All right. Well, amongst all of this competition, including a character from Skyfall, Javier Bardem,
yes,
certainly could have a very strong contender. I know a lot of Sfoovy prognosticators were predicting that he was going to walk away with the Sfoovy, but he didn't, did he?
He did not. And,
no,
you know, I also want to give a shout out to Joseph Gilgun, who is the evil Scottish guy with the mohawk type thing in Lockout.
Space Jail.
Very impressive.
Fantastic
crazy
supporting crazy eyes,
yeah,
in that film as well from him.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
But
he didn't win either.
He did
that's
not
how,
win.
That's how good this competition is this year.
It was tough. It was very tough.
So who won?
Well, I went with Alex Cross. Not really a beautiful movie on the level of Skyfall.
No?
Nor a coherent one.
No?
But I have to give a shout out to Matthew Fox, who gives a performance like nothing else really this year as an impossibly competent mercenary killer.
Was he Picasso? Was that his name?
He never really has a name. I think they call
him Picasso. That's how he was credited.
Picasso.
Yes.
But he, you know, he really does everything.
Mm-hmm.
He can kickbox.
Yes.
He can seduce women with
correct,
his kickboxing skills.
Correct.
He swims inside the pipes of a building.
Yes, he's a scuba diver, trained scuba diver.
He really, it's amazing what he can do.
He's a marksman.
And then also, he has some kind of like PTSD, some kind of damage, in
yes,
which he's just basically like twitching all the time.
Yeah,
and
sweaty,
his eyes,
very sweaty,
very
bug-eyed,
sweaty, has basically no body fat, and his eyes are like open, so you can see the whites all the way around them all the time.
Being disrespectful, very disrespectful, and I don't like that, not at all. I'm a professional.
What do you call a little run-in last night, huh?
Dr. Cross, you're taking this personally.
Yeah, about as personal as you took running out of that building with your tail tucked between your legs.
That job I can finish on another day.
But failure has to be difficult for a guy like you. So how did you punish yourself? Was it wire under your fingernails?
Textbook psychology, Dr. Cross. Seriously, textbook. By the way, your wife looks stunning.
I wouldn't call it a good performance of Matthew Fox, but it is a very impressively dedicated one.
It is outstanding.
And it's particularly funny in contrast to Tyler Perry, who, you know, plays things very, like, maybe way too...
Very
too
underplayed.
Underplayed, yes. And then you have this, like, crazy contrast. It's pretty amazing.
That really was an amazing crazy eyes performance.
It was
yeah, really just incredible. It's hard. I even though I'm giving it some to someone else, I agree with you. I think that was the clear winner this year, but I have to pick somebody else, right? I mean, that's the whole, otherwise what
them's
are the Sfoovies?
The rules.
Them's the
yeah,
rules of the Sfoovies that we just invented 20 minutes before we started recording. So there was another very worthy nominee this year, and that was Michael Sheen from Twilight Breaking Dawn. What is it? The Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 2, : The Underworld Edition.
Yeah.
Whatever it was called, it was this year's Twilight movie, and it was Michael Sheen giving a just incredibly over-the-top performance. It was like it wasn't even ham. It was like pork belly. It was like the most succulent, fatty pork belly of acting. Everyone else in this movie is taking... I mean, well, that's not true. But a lot of the people in these Twilight movies take it very seriously.
Very seriously.
And certainly the people in the audience take it very seriously. Michael Sheen knows that there is nothing about this that should be taken seriously. And he is enjoying every second that he gets to play this outrageously evil ancient vampire. And he isn't in a ton of the movie. This is supporting Crazy Eyes, after all. But I know the... I really didn't find too many reviews that did not mention his performance. And particularly towards the end of the film, you know exactly what I'm going to say, Allison.
I know what's coming.
You know what's coming. So at the end of the film, there is, of course, this big climactic showdown between the heroes and the villains for whatever. Do I have to explain it?
No.
Good. That was the correct answer. I don't have to explain it. And he is angry, and there's sort of these little scuffles that are starting between the good guys and the bad guys, and sort of some violence. And he gives out this giggle, this, like, insane giggle. And I might be underselling it there.
I think you can find someone has looped the audio online.
Oh, I'm sure there's a GIF of it. There's probably a YouTube clip of him doing it over and over. It was a transcendent moment of great bad acting. It really was. I remember I read an interview with the director of the film, Bill Condon, who they asked about that scene in particular, and he said, like, did you, like, and it was clearly a question of, like, how did you let him give you that big, like, it's way over the top. How did you let him do that? He's like, that was him at, like, a 5. I have takes that I didn't use of him at a 10.
Extras, DVD
you must,
extras.
The public must see this footage for the good of humanity. Release the footage of Michael Sheen at a 10. That's what I say. That will go in the Best Supporting Crazy Eyes Hall of Fame, not just this year, but all year. So, Michael Sheen, I salute you. I don't know if I would recommend Twilight Breaking Dawn, Part 2, the final installment, the trilogy ends, with Part 5. But if you're going to see it, he's the part you're going to enjoy the most. That's for sure. Allison, we are pleased once again to be sponsored this week by MoviePass, the new subscription service in which you pay a monthly fee. And you get to see a movie per day at most major movie theaters. You check in using an app on your smartphone, and you use a membership card to buy the tickets. And it works for any new release, as long as it's not a 3D movie or IMAX. Those films are not yet covered under MoviePass.
So if you're a frequent moviegoer, or if you know a frequent moviegoer, MoviePass is a service that could turn out to be a really good deal for you. You know, you can do the math. Certainly by New York ticket prices, it works out pretty well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, rather than paying per ticket, you pay a flat fee for the month, and that gets you entry to one film per day, though it should be noted that has to be a different film each time. You can't just go see the same film every day.
Right, right. MoviePass is currently invite only, but they're offering a limited number of subscriptions to FilmSpotting and FilmSpotting SVU listeners, and they have 30-day, 90-day, or year-long gift packages available. So check out moviepass.com/filmspotting for more info and to get $10 off your second month of your subscription.
Okay, so our next swoovy category is Best On-Screen Chemistry. Kind of a challenging one this year.
Yeah.
I don't know. This was not a great year in kind of like naturally, at least certainly on the romantic side, there weren't necessarily like crackling connections between people that came to mind.
No, they didn't leap off the screen. You had to kind of go to like alternate chemistries, buddy chemistry or hero and villain chemistry or stuff like that.
Which is what you picked, right?
Yes.
What is your pick for this category?
My pick for this category is a film that I enjoyed. I mentioned it. It's one of my favorite films of the year, actually. It is the chemistry between buddies Frank and Casper, played by Frank Vam and Casper Christensen in the Danish film Clown, which is available for rental on iTunes and YouTube currently. And these guys, they're comedians. You know, they're well known in Europe. They're, you know, we're just discovering them now. But these guys have actually done a TV show as these characters. It's kind of like a, almost like a Curb Your Enthusiasm sort of thing. Like they play themselves, they play comedians who get into these very awkward situations. So obviously these guys have been working together for a long time. And that shows they have this amazing comedic chemistry and beautiful timing. And it has that wonderful sort of, like Curb, it has that wonderful kind of spontaneous improvisatory feel where they're just very comfortable. They're simpatico. They just have the right. They're on the same wavelengths. Pretty much how we are as podcasters, Allison. You know, they are like, I would say they are they're like the film spotting SVU of Danish comedians.
Yeah, we have yet to have a Heart of Darkness style journey by canoe.
That's true. That's
true. Maybe in the summer.
Maybe this summer. We haven't, yeah, it's true. That is what Clown is about. We haven't, like the characters in Clown, we haven't traveled together to a brothel. That's true. We haven't done that either.
That we know of.
That we remember.
Yes.
Let's put it that way. But nevertheless, no, these guys are fantastic. I thought this movie was, my favorite comedy of the year. Not a great year for comedies either. There were some good ones.
Yeah, but
But not a lot of great ones. This one, to me, I've seen this movie a bunch of times now. I got to host a Q&A with these guys at a screening. They were great to interview. They were great to talk to. I love the movie. I loved it when I saw it the first time last year at Fantastic Fest, and I've just every time I watch it, I love it more and more. I don't own it yet, but I will own it soon, and I'll just keep watching it over and over. Very rewatchable movie. We're not doing a spoovie for like the most rewatchable movie of the year, but this might get my vote for that as well. If you haven't seen it yet, I know we've talked about it on the show before. Again, very strongly recommended. Clown, it's available for rental on iTunes and YouTube.
So I did want to find a romantic pairing to call out for this category. So I went with a film that I actually really enjoyed, though it's not particularly universally loved. And it's certainly a messy film. Like, I don't think it's perfect by any means. But that film is Lawless, directed by John Hillcoat, which is available for rent on Amazon, Vudu, iTunes, and YouTube. And incidentally, it probably has like a decent candidate for Best Supporting Crazy Eyes in Guy Pearce, which I can't believe we forgot to mention.
He was pretty crazy eyes
in that
movie.
He's pretty crazy eyes, yeah. But the characters in question with their chemistry are Tom Hardy and Jessica Chastain. And what I liked about this is that, you know, this is a film about like incredibly tough bootlegging brothers from Franklin County, Virginia in the 30s. And the toughest of them all is Tom Hardy's character, Forrest Bondurant, who is like potentially immortal, at least for a lot of the course of the film. And it's, you know, Tom Hardy's other incomprehensible muttering role of the year. But he's pretty interesting and like certainly convincingly like imposing, even in a cardigan, which he manages to make look extremely tough. Don't roll your eyes.
Yes, if this was Best Supporting cardigan, I could definitely get behind Tom Hardy in Lawless.
But I liked that his kind of odd combination of like grandfatherly qualities in the ways he talks and in the way he dresses combined with his complete hard-assery in terms of how scary he can be. And Jessica Chastain plays this woman from the city who has maybe a not so savory past, and she comes to work for the Bondurant brothers, and their flirtation is actually really nice in that he, for as tough as he is like both courtly with her and incredibly awkward. Like, he has no idea how to act on, you know, romancing her in any way. And she essentially has to come to him. But I think they have like a really kind of nice unspoken build to their relationship.
They say in town you're looking for someone to help out around the place. Is that position still vacant?
Forgive me for asking, but what's a lady like you want here?
City can grind a girl down. Gets to a point where you start looking for somewhere quiet.
And I think that actually played out really well in a film that is otherwise, I think, it does not put a premium on romance per se. And the main romance that it showcases is one that between Shia LaBeouf that you don't really want to pay attention to. I thought that this side connection was really well done and kind of unusual. Like, it was not your typical depiction of romance. So that is Lawless, and it's available for rent on most outlets. I take it you're not a fan of this
I
one.
Was not a fan. We haven't had a lot of disagreement on the Svoovies. What do the bylaws about the Svoovies say? If I hate a movie that you give one to, can I like retroactively take it back? How does that work?
Of course not.
No, because I did not enjoy Lawless. Certainly not the worst movie I saw there, but it might be on like the lower part of a list of the best, of the least.
Wow.
I really hated Lawless.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think other than the fact that it chooses to focus on Shia LaBeouf, which is a problem.
That's like a big problem.
It's a major problem. But I liked all of the kind of other side characters.
I mean, there were some nice side characters in it, you know, like Guy Pearce giving yet another memorable performance. And yes, he has very intense supporting crazy eyes. I just felt like it was just like wandering around like for no reason. Like, I really didn't ever understand why. And it is about these bootlegging brothers, and Guy Pearce is this lawman who's trying to stop them. I didn't understand why he didn't just go and stop them in the first place. Isn't there like an hour and a half of the movie goes by?
Get money out of them.
Just go kill them. But go kill them.
He doesn't want to kill them.
Kill them and take the money.
He wants to get paid every time. He wants a share. Never mind. Anyway, we're arguing over plot details of a movie we saw months ago. Let's
move on.
Look,
if you're going to see one movie this year with Jessica Chastain and Jason Clarke, it should be Zero Dark Thirty.
Fair. I will give you that.
All right. Well, what is our next swoovy, Allison?
Our next swoovy is best use of song. And, you know, sometimes a movie just uses a song choice really well. And
absolutely.
It's moving. So what's your pick for this one? I know we did a little research.
We did a little research to confirm the song.
Yeah, we did.
Well, I think I picked. Ended up deciding to pick a different one.
Okay.
But the more it was funny because I didn't want to pick the cliched choice, and then I was looking at the clips online on movieclips.com, and I was like, oh, actually, this is the much better scene. And it is it's the remix of It's Raining Men, used to great effect, comedic, sexual, dramatic, in Magic Mike, which is available for rental on Amazon, iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and Vudu. And what we were referring to there in our setup was the fact that there were quite a few songs used in Magic Mike. There was a lot of stripping scenes in the movie. One that we were also debating was the use of Genuine's Pony, is one of Channing Tatum's fine stripper scenes. But there's a lot of good use of music. I mean, the stripping scenes in this movie, even if, like me, you're not necessarily enjoying the sexual side of these scenes.
The man flesh.
The man flesh. I'm not necessarily enjoying it, but I have no problem with it. They're great scenes. They're brilliantly shot. They're brilliantly choreographed, often by the cast members themselves, if I understand correctly. Channing Tatum had a background in male stripping, so he brought a certain level of authenticity to the scene, certainly. Well edited by Soderbergh, well shot by Soderbergh himself. As I recall, there was a lot of scenes where the love interest for Channing Tatum's character is watching these scenes, and we're sort of watching her kind of not necessarily try to react as she's watching him strip. I thought that was a really lovely use of editing to watch her reactions as we're watching him dance, and also watching the other women in the room scream like banshees with excitement. You know, I liked both of Soderbergh's movies this year. I may be mentioning his other movie later, and as a matter of fact. And Magic Mike was a movie that just missed my top 10 list of the year. And really, what would that movie have been without the use of the music, without the dancing? So much of the movie was about the authenticity and the fascinating world of this strip club, which is sexual, but it's also, there's something kind of innocent and sweet about it. Wasn't there, Allison? It wasn't dirty, you know? It was kind of
it was a little dirty, but it was about camaraderie and these guys hanging
together.
But
like kind
together.
Of like cutesy dirty, you
yeah,
know?
There was half like a we're putting on a show aspect to it.
Yeah.
But it was kind of cute.
It made you enjoy the fact that it was raining men. What a wonderful situation to be Raining Men. So yeah, that's It's Raining Men, the remix from Magic Mike, available for rental on Amazon, iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and Vudu.
Well, my pick is from a film that I mentioned earlier, which is Rust and Bone, Jacques Audiard's
film.
Can you
describe it again?
What was it about again? It ties in really well.
Okay, perfect.
So during the tragic Marineland accident in which a killer whale eats Marianne Cotillard's legs.
Yes.
I don't know if that's actually what happens, because the incidents surrounding the how she loses her legs are not made completely clear. But I'm choosing to believe, even though it may be unfair to orcas, that it involves a whale eating her legs.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, so it's at the marine park. You know, it's a Sea World, basically. There are tons of big crowds. She is a trainer, and she's out with other trainers, and they're playing Katy Perry's Firework, a pretty, you know, standard choice for this kind of scenario. It's playing like in the world of the film. It's being broadcast across the speakers, and people are clapping along. And then the accident happens. So then they revisit the song later, after Marianne Cotillard's character has been through like a really hard time. She has retreated into just being by herself, or like her whole sense of self has been destroyed. And then she has this kind of encounter with this boxer, you know, kind of bouncer, boxer guy played by...
Didn't you say he was an underground boxer?
He's, yes, he works at security. And then his side gig is he
bare knuckle boxes.
He does bare knuckle boxing in this kind of underground fight.
Do you ever see Matthew Fox from Alex Cross in the background somewhere?
You do not, nor do you see Brad Pitt in Fight Club.
Damn.
Yeah, but Matthias Schoenaerts, if I pronounce
that
right.
No, that's good. No, that's good. You got
Thank
it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Who is also in Bullhead.
Bullhead. He's the lead fantastic in Bullhead.
And he's very good in this, too. Mm-hmm. You know, becomes a kind of... they start a romance, but it doesn't start off as a romance. She kind of calls on him. I think it's basically maybe because he's just someone outside her normal circle, someone she met kind of incidentally. And he kind of really starts by not giving her any kind of the usual, having no interest in giving her the usual sympathy and being kind of a guy with no pretense, really starts bringing her back to life. And then so there's a scene where she kind of is out on her balcony. And the music comes on the soundtrack as she starts practicing basically the signals that were the ones that she would use with the whales. And it becomes this actually really beautiful, uplifting moment. It is the most lovely use of Katy Perry's Firework that I think you will ever find in a movie. It's very touching. And so it's a really great use of the song and a great moment in the film. Rust and Bone is still in theaters, I believe, so you are not able to stream it yet, but I do really recommend it. I think it's a pretty nice find that's out there. It's worth a look.
All right, Allison, we're down to the final two spoovies. The tension is high. The people who've spent millions of dollars campaigning want to know if it was all in vain or not. This is what it comes down to. Careers are changed. Lives are altered. People who listen to podcasts continue to listen to them. Let's begin with the most purely pleasurable movie of 2012. This is a movie that needs no defense other than the fact that we found it wonderful. It didn't have to be artistic, or smart, clever. It might have been those things, but it doesn't matter. What was the most purely pleasurable movie of 2012?
As much as I had felt like I should have gone with Lockout,
yes,
or Space Jail,
right,
as we have made it known.
Yes.
I felt like the most purely pleasurable experience I had in the theaters this year was at Cabin in the Woods. You know, Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon's film. It's kind of meta movie about your typical, like almost way too typical slasher film setup, and then a potential whole explanation for why those things happen is so clever, so funny, and actually genuinely scary at parts as well. It's I think it manages to do something that's very difficult in films that are self-referential, which is that it is packed with geeky jokes, like so many. It is like a loving homage to watching way too many horror movies. But at the same time, it also is a standalone movie. You do not need to only be getting in jokes in order for it to work. It is an entirely entertaining film in its own right, and one that actually is filled with very vivid, distinctive characters, even though the characters who go off to the cabin are meant to fit certain types and are chosen to fit certain types. Mm-hmm. It is about how they don't actually fit in with them.
We're gonna lock this place down.
He's right.
We'll go room by room, barricade every window and door. We gotta play it safe. No matter what happens, we have to stay together. This isn't right.
What? What's the matter?
This isn't right. We should split up. We can cover more ground that way.
Yeah. Yeah, good idea. Really?
So it manages to be both like an extremely clever take on your typical attractive people go off to the woods and get killed, and you're always like, why did you not run away or call for help? And then also a pretty good office satire, if an unconventional office. So it just is such a funny movie. I mean, I'm sure that if you are at all interested in the work of Joss Whedon, you have seen this many times already. But if this looked like a kind of just a meta in-joke exercise, I assure you it's much more fun than that. It manages to be an experience unto itself. And that is available for rent now on Amazon, Vudu, iTunes, Blockbuster, and YouTube.
It's a fine choice. I could have picked it myself. a fine film, one of my favorite movies of the year. And for me, I don't know if there was any moment in any other movie more pleasurable than the moment, I won't spoil the details, but the moment in the movie, Allison, with the unicorn. That is pure pleasure.
I prefer the merman.
The merman?
Yeah.
Well, to each his own.
Yeah. Yeah,
you just say merman, I say unicorn. I think that's how that old song goes.
We'll just have to agree to disagree.
Let's move on to my swoovie for the most purely pleasurable movie of 2012. I was just talking about Steven Soderbergh. I mentioned I might bring up his other movie from this year, and here's where I'm going to do it. My favorite, most purely pleasurable movie of 2012 was Haywire, which I enjoyed the first time I saw it in the theater in January. And now that it is available on Netflix Instant, I rewatched it. And I liked it even more. I had even more fun with it. I thought the action was great. This character who is sold out by all the men in her life, Gina Carano, this real-life mixed martial artist. Except her daddy, that's true. Her dad sticks by her side, who's played by Bill Paxton. But all the other men in her life sell her out and at various points in the movie try to beat the crap out of her. But she is way too tough for them, and she beats the crap out of them instead, which is a glorious reversal. And I don't know that it necessarily aspires to the level of greatness or artistry that other Steven Soderbergh's movies do. But once in a while, he kind of produces these sort of like exercises in fun and style. And when he does, he just does them better than just about anybody else.
Rodrigo, Jay Paso, what are you working so late for? It's what, past eight, your time?
Yeah, but listen, Mallory Kane just called me. I thought you should know.
When she called you at home?
Yes.
Was that a nice conversation?
Oh, yeah. Very nice. Brief, but very nice. Yeah. She thanked me for my assistance.
She's still in Dublin?
Well, she said she just landed in New York.
Good. Well, why don't you stay off your house line?
I wouldn't go outside till I call you back. Or your family.
I see.
All right.
Thank you.
Rodrigo, you take care, all right?
Yeah, sure. Bye.
And actually, it was a fun movie to rewatch, too, to me, because when it came onto Netflix, it was right around the time, you know, and I don't want to get political here, but it was right around the time when, like, all the election stuff was about binders full of women and Mitt Romney and all these sorts of things, where it suddenly felt like this was a movie about this moment where men were legislating women's bodies and what they were allowed to do or not do. It felt to me like all of a sudden this perfect metaphor for that, where this woman is in this bureaucracy controlled by all these slimy, sleazy men. You know, guys like Michael Douglas and Antonio Banderas giving an amazing beard performance. Yes. Not supporting Crazy Eyes, no. Best supporting Crazy Beard. And, you know, stroking his beard and talking about the horrible things he wants to do to Gina Carano. Oh, God, it was fabulous. It was really wonderful. And then you just add on the fact that, you know, she can do all these stunts herself because she's an amazing mixed martial artist. And she's just kicking the crap out of these guys, including Channing Tatum, including Ewan McGregor, giving a great, like, sleazy performance. Really wonderful. Just a wonderfully pleasurable movie. Also, maybe the best last line of a movie this year, or maybe the best last scene of a movie this year, the ending of this movie, just wonderful, just delightful. The cut to black in that movie, just outstanding. So that's Haywire. It is available now on Netflix. Watch instantly. And Allison.
Yes.
What is our next and final swoovie?
Our final swoovie is one in which we look ahead.
Yes.
With no real basis
for
these decisions.
No, why would we?
And it is the best movie of 2013.
That's right.
It's our prediction. And we have some historical background here that
we should explain. Yes, we've done this when we did the podcast, the old podcast, and we used to do these sorts of awards. Every year we would give out our award for the best movie of the next year based entirely on trailers or advertising or who's in it or what it's
or who made it, yes.
Yes. And the rule was you weren't allowed to pick anything that had played at a festival in advance. So if it's played, let's say, at Toronto, but it's getting a release next year, that was not allowed. And if it was playing at a festival like Sundance, so it's already been announced. So, for example, a very conservative choice would have been the new film from Shane Carruth, the director of Primer. His new film, Upstream Color, premieres at Sundance. But what's the fun at picking a movie that we know is playing at Sundance and it's probably going to be pretty good? There's no challenge in that. So we pick something that we have even less knowledge about. And we should note, Because it's no fun if you don't hold yourself to what you pick. The last time we did this, Allison,
yes,
was back in 2010. We picked the best films of 2011. Would you like to know what you predicted would be the best films of 2011?
I would love to know.
You predicted The Tree of Life, fine choice. Was it on your top 10 list eventually?
I don't know. I don't remember.
It made such an impression.
Too long ago.
Well, I mean, you liked the movie, though.
I did like it, yes.
We need to talk about Kevin. Did you like that film?
I did like that film.
Lynn Ramsey?
Yeah, I don't think it made it my top 10, but
okay.
I did like it.
And finally, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Those are actually not bad picks, but they're pretty conservative, I have to say. Like, I feel like I was picking things that were, like, keeping it safe.
I only really liked... I liked We Need to Talk About Kevin. I only really liked one of your three films.
Yeah.
But these were your predictions.
Yeah,
so,
and I was fond of all of them.
I, on the other hand, I made some bold choices.
All right, let's hear this.
Your Highness... clearly one of the best films of 2011. Clearly. The Muppets. Really, one of the best films of the last decade, I thought, when it finally came out. Moneyball. A movie which I actually did not like when it came out.
Really?
Even though some people did. And I made one good pick. I picked Hugo, which did make my list of the best films of 2011, I believe. So I was 1-for-4.
Mm.
We're going to give you a 2. I'm going to give you a 2-for-3.
No, thank you.
I don't know which 2, but I'm going to give you a 2-for-3.
Very generous. Yeah,
you did better than I did.
Thank you.
So that's what it is. You know, you were going to hold ourselves to this. Hopefully in a year's time, hopefully we'll be sitting here giving out the second annual Svoovies and we'll be able to look back at these picks. Allison, looking ahead.
Yes.
What are your Svoovies for the best movies of 2013, having not seen any of these movies in 2012?
Okay, I came up with just 2.
You have 2?
Yes.
Okay.
My main one is one that I've been looking forward to for a long time,
okay,
despite like certain turnover in the cast. It is Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity, which is due to come out on October 18th, 2013. Stars Sandra Bullock and George Clooney as astronauts who they're on a spacewalk. Debris crashes into their space shuttle. I think it's just the two of them tethered together, spinning off into space. And there are, I think, like 2 other listed cast members who might be just voices. So it's mostly them spinning out into space. And
what could go wrong?
What could go wrong? It sounds horrifyingly claustrophobic to me, but also giant because it's in space. So there's a lot of really promising things. Cuarón is a fantastic director. And, you know, I've heard things about like the first shot supposed to be like minutes and minutes long. So I'm very intrigued by this one. I hope it's as good as I want it to be.
Okay. What's your other nominee?
My other nominee is Wong Kar-wai's The Grandmasters. Easy, I know.
Come on.
Yeah,
that's it's almost cheating.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have seen the Chinese trailer for this, and it looks pretty sweet.
It does look pretty awesome.
Yeah, Tony Leung, Zhang Ziyi. It's the story of Ip Man, but it's also, you know, a Wong Kar-wai movie, so it's like incredibly lush looking. It's like
gonna be amazing.
It looks awesome.
It does look really awesome.
Yeah, that's a Grandmasters. I don't think there's a U.S. date attached to it yet, but it'll
supposed
come here.
To be premiering. I'm sure it's supposed to be at least premiering at festivals.
Yeah,
this year.
So you know, it'll make it its way around.
Fingers crossed we'll see it sooner rather than later. Well, I think you're gonna win out on this one, particularly because that would have been probably my number one. And just for the sake of fun, we're gonna pick some different movies. Let's start with the most bold choice on my
All
list,
right.
shall we?
Oh, I can't wait.
I am predicting that one of the best movies of 2013 will be Pain and Gain.
Wow.
The new film from Michael Bay. Purely on the basis that it stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Mark Wahlberg as a couple of Florida steroid-abusing knucklehead bodybuilders who become criminals involved in an extortion ring and a kidnapping plot that goes horribly awry.
What's going on, Dio?
Hey, let's just get tired of being where you are, Adrian.
No, I kind of like it here. I mean, the weights are new to
me. I mean, in life, man.
When's the last time you paid your rent when it was due?
I got a plan to change that.
Where'd you do your time, pal?
Up north.
How you fixed for a job now?
You just can't kidnap a guy and take his things. That's so illegal.
Well, sure we can.
Victor Kershaw is a criminal prick who deserves bad stuff to happen to him.
We go through with this. Nobody gets hurt, right?
Oh, man. We snatch him.
There he is!
We grab him. He signs a few signatures. We give him a protein shake. He doesn't even know what happened. I watched a lot of movies, Paul. I know what I'm doing.
Allison, I don't know how this movie isn't the greatest film of all time. Even though it's directed by Michael Bay, who has not made some of my favorite films of all time, lest we make that unclear. Nevertheless, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Mark Wahlberg, Anthony Mackie, Rebel Wilson, Ed Harris, Tony Shalhoub, Ken Jeong, Rob Corddry. How would that cast? Could it miss? How? Tell me, Allison. How?
Michael Bay and his way with comedy, of course.
Oh, yeah. He's got a very light touch.
Well, that is a bold choice.
It's
Matt.
A bold choice.
I really
it's
admire.
You know what it is? It's an aspirational choice. I really hope. And we're having a little fun here. But honestly, I would love nothing more than for Michael Bay to make a really awesome comedy with those guys. I think if it's good, this movie's going to be fabulous. I really do think that. I think if it's good, it's going to be really good. If it's going to be bad, it's going to be horrible. There's no in the middle for Pain and Gain. But the title is also maybe I didn't mention this. The title is Pain and Gain. And I don't know who they're actually playing, but I'm going to call Dwayne The Rock Johnson Pain, and I'm going to call Mark Wahlberg Gain. Is that okay?
That's perfectly fine with me. I was hoping that you'd confirm that those were their names, but I'm glad that we're just going to go with that anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, I may be reaching. I may be overreaching. You picked the Wong Kar Wai movie. What am I supposed to pick? For my other pick, I'll just stick to two since you picked two. I'm going to pick one that I hope is a little bit of a safer pick. A little bit. And that is The World's End, the upcoming film reuniting Edgar Wright, director, with his frequent co-stars and collaborators and co-writers, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. Pegg, who is also the co-writer with Edgar Wright, and Nick Frost, who's the star with Simon Pegg. This is going to be the third part of what is called the Three Flavors Cornetto Trilogy, along with Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. This is the final part of the trilogy. It is about a group of friends attempting an epic pub crawl. I think there may actually be some science fiction end of the world shenanigans involved. I'm trying to avoid spoilers for this movie. I haven't read too much about it, but it does involve Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, which is enough for me already. But it also has Rosamund Pike and Patty Considine and Martin Freeman and Eddie Marsan. So it's got a great cast as well. Maybe not as great as Pain and Gain, but it's a good cast. Obviously, these are collaborators who we adore, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, two of my favorites in recent years. To me, this one is a little bit more of a sure thing than Pain and Gain. I'm hoping at the year's end, The World's End will stand amongst the greatest films of 2013. Okay, in lieu of a full Behind the Eight Ball segment this week, we're just going to give you a very quick rundown of a few new titles on streaming that you may want to watch while you're enjoying your breaks. And by the way, happy New Year, happy Christmas, happy Kwanzaa, happy Hanukkah, happy everything. Enjoy your holidays. We hope you're having a good time. And if you need a movie to watch, here are a few quick recommendations. All of these are available on Netflix Instant. If they're coming to Netflix Instant, I believe by the time you're listening to this, they will all be available. Or they'll be available within the next day or two. January 1st is the last day that they become available. So here we go. Some titles that are available. Sleepwalk With Me, the independent film, which I think we actually talked about as an opening break suggestion. Starring and written by comedian Mike Birbiglia about his life and career as a stand-up comedian. A really fun and charming film. Jeff Who Lives at Home, which I really enjoyed. One of my probably honorable mentions of the best of 2012. This is a really nice movie from the Duplass brothers, Mark and Jay. And if you're a movie fan, I expect you'll really enjoy this because Jason Segel's character, Jeff, who lives at home, he is a real fan of the movie Signs by M. Night Shyamalan. And he believes that what Signs teaches us is true, that if you just pay attention to the signs in the world, everything is connected and it will all make sense. And over the course of this very eventful day, Jeff is proven correct in that assumption. He gets into these crazy adventures involving his brother, played by Ed Helms, and Ed Helms' wife, played by Judy Greer. And it's a really wonderful, sweet, heartwarming film that kind of does a lot of the sort of cliched things about this kind of movie, but does them in a really smart way. I rewatched it again just a few weeks ago, and it holds up. It's a really nice film. I really like it. Jeff Who Lives at Home. Recommended if you want to hurt yourself, I guess, The Devil Inside, one of the worst movies of 2012.
Definitely. Not a good use of found footage in this case.
A bad use of found footage, but actually kind of so terrible it was actually kind of funny, I thought. It was one of the sort of so bad they're good kind of movies. I mean, on a level of kind of dumbness that you don't get to see in mainstream movies very often. That is available starting on December 31st. Also available on December 31st, Red Lights, which was a movie that got sort of mixed reviews. Some people really liked it. Some people said this was good, and then it flies wildly off the rails in the second and third acts. I didn't get to see it, but I am kind of curious about it because of the cast. Cillian Murphy, Robert De Niro, and Sigourney Weaver, I believe. I was looking forward to this one. I don't know if it's going to be that great, but it's available on Netflix, so what do you got to lose? Starting on January 1st, very quickly, some classic repertory titles for you. Topsy Turvy, Escape from Alcatraz, and Terminator 2, Judgment Day, all available on Netflix Instant starting on January 1st. Now, Allison, let's just recap for our listeners the listener's choice options for next episode. We'll put the Svoovies away. We'll get back to our usual format, and we're going to have three listener's choice options that you're going to be choosing from. What's the first one, Allison?
First one is Dark Horse, the most recent film from Todd Solondz of Happiness, Welcome to the Dollhouse. A film about a guy who is not really a boy anymore, but he, like Jeff, lives at home and has never really gotten his life together. And, you know, in typical Todd Solondz fashion, he doesn't necessarily pull it together by the end of the movie either. But that is available on Netflix as of January 1st.
Okay, and our second choice is a film we're both very much looking forward to. It's called Killer Joe. It's available on iTunes and VOD. Another amazing cast. This is like a theme here. A lot of amazing casts we're talking about. Matthew McConaughey, Emile Hirsch, Juno Temple, Thomas Hayden Church, Gina Gershon, and on and on and on. It is a film about a young man whose life is put in danger because of a debt, who decides to put a hit out on his evil mother in order to collect the insurance. It's directed by William Friedkin, the fabulous director of The Exorcist and French Connection and many other great films, reuniting with the writer of his recent film Bug, Tracy Letts, based on a play, and Tracy Letts also wrote the screenplay. So that is Killer Joe, available on iTunes and VOD.
Our last pick is a film that I'm sure you're all familiar with. We're looking forward to revisiting it. It is The Usual Suspects, which will be available on Netflix as of December 31st. It is directed by Bryan Singer, you know, who has since gone on to have a really giant, high-profile career in terms of directing big blockbusters. So, you know, this is a film that I think we both enjoyed a lot when it came out in 1995. Really eager to look back at it and see if it holds up, see if it's still the kind of extremely enjoyable and very impressive film that it was back then. Also, another film with a great cast, including Kevin Spacey, Gabriel Byrne,
Benicio del Toro, Kevin Pollak.
Yeah, it's got like a really, really solid acting as well. And then, of course, a great twisty plot. So that's Usual Suspects on Netflix.
So which movie should we review on the next episode of Film Spotting Streaming Video Unit? You can send your pick to svu at filmspottingsvu.com, or you can enter in the poll on the right-hand side of the page at filmspottingsvu.com. Your vote must be received by Monday, January 7th at noon. After that, we'll announce the winner on our Twitter account, twitter.com/filmspottingsvu, and you will have all that week to watch the film and then join us for our conversation on our next episode, which will be on or around Monday, January 14th.
FilmSpottingSVU.com is also where you can find our show archive, as well as a list of direct links to all the movies we discuss in the episode. The Film Spotting SVU remixed theme song is by Vince Vandal. You can listen to more of Vince's work at VinceVandal.com. And we will be back in 2 weeks with more movie recommendations and the movie review that you pick. In the meantime, you can follow me and Matt on Twitter at Allison Wilmore and at Matt Singer. And you can follow the show at FilmSpotting SVU.
At, like the Star Wars thing? No, okay, just keep going. That's fine. Just keep going.
That's good. That's where we'll announce the winner of each show's listener's choice and where we'll share more streaming suggestions from SVU listeners. For Film Spotting SVU, I'm Allison Wilmore.
And I'm Matt Singer. Thanks for listening and have a happy new year, everybody.